Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Oh, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Got Kirk here this evening. JB is off this evening. Kirk, last week I opened the show with a number of comments, and one of the comments was regarding the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I made a number of comments about them, and I would like to reinforce what I said, and then I want to talk briefly about an email that I received from somebody who is having a very difficult time keeping their facts straight.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
What I said was that the fundamental basis of Black Lives Matter is the supposition that whites are killing blacks in a way that disregards their right to live, and that a pervasive problem in America is whites, because of perceived racism, hunting and killing blacks. And what I shared was that is deeply troubling.
Mm-hmm.
Because the inverse is true. And I said that it had been years since I had done the research, because I did the research back at the time that the Black Lives Matter movement first came onto the scene. I think it was Trayvon Martin who was killed by the idiot in Florida. And what I found and what I shared last week is that if a black person is murdered, I said last week that somewhere between 80% and 85% of the time, the perpetrator is another black individual, typically a young black man. And I was right, but not precisely right. 80% to 85% is a subset of the actual number. The actual number is 93%. 93% of the time that a black person is murdered, it is a black person who has murdered the black person. Or if racism is the cause, it would have to be black self-loathing. Blacks hating other blacks. 93% of the time. Now, that is a staggering number, because African Americans represent between 12 and 13% of the U.S. population. So if blacks were killed by Caucasians in the range of 70% of the time, then they would be acting no different than any other race in relation to blacks, including other blacks, because that's about the percentage of the population they represent. But for blacks that represent 12 to 13% of the U.S. population to be responsible for 93% of African-American murders is staggering. And it is so staggering that for there to be a protest, a series of protests, based upon the premise that whites, out of racism, are targeting and killing blacks, as opposed to blacks are responsible for over 90% of the murders of blacks, is indicative of what's wrong with our world. We accept as true that which is overtly false. It is what political correctness has done, where that which is absolutely false must be accepted as true or you're offensive. So I had a person who listened to the show who clearly is was in one way or another. I have no idea whether his real name is as he has given it, so I'm not going to even use his name. But he clearly was affiliated with Larry, because he says, well, I didn't accept everything Larry had to say. I thought Larry was treated unfairly because you didn't give him the opportunity to defend himself. Excuse me, I had Larry on this show for years. Well, yes, hundreds of people were complaining against his abusive nature, and then Larry does some of the most despicable things you can imagine while continuing to promote his conspiracies in direct refutation of the only two things that I ask.
Yeah.
With my translations and transliterations, you are free to use them. I don't charge anything for them. You're free to use them any way you like, so long as you don't violate two edicts. Translations. They're my transliterations. They're my insights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just
copyright.
Fact. That is fact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't own Yahweh's words, but my translations of his words are mine.
You do. Yes.
I have invested 20 years at 10 hours a day, 6 days a week in composing them. And the hundreds, if not thousands, of insights derived from them, you are not at liberty to take and to use in violation of the two things that I request. They're yours free, but you cannot use them to incite or to commit a violent act. Yahweh used words. I use words. If you want to use my words, you too must use your words. Do not use anything that I have translated or written to commit an act of violence. And number two, because Yahweh hates conspiracy, because it is the ultimate cesspool for credibility, and because the root of all conspiracy is blame the Jews, and the vast, overwhelming preponderance of them are untrue. Yahweh does not want his word intermixed, babbled with conspiracy, and I don't want my translations, transliterations, or insights mixed with babble.
That's fair.
With conspiracy. That's those the only two caveats. So, this individual who will go nameless, who complains that I'm not giving him the opportunity to respond, I lost track at over 30 responses, where at least 10 to 15 members of the Covenant family are CC. He writes, as an African American, do you, by the way, when you begin a letter, Kirk, say, as a, what are you?
English American? Well,
yeah,
I don't
English.
Know.
Yeah.
Some European, English.
As an English, do you refer to yourself as an English American? Do you even refer to yourself as an American?
No, my wife is Italian. She doesn't say I'm an Italian American either.
No, you don't say that you're. She doesn't say she's Italian. You don't say you're English. You don't say you're American. I'm suing Indian and Irish. I only say that to indicate I'm a mutt.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. It's just to indicate. You know, I wish I was a Yehudim, but I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a mutt. I'm a goy. And I'm constantly exposing that which is wrong about America. But this person, he begins identifying himself by his skin color, African ethnicity, and by his politics, American. Now, that's a bad start. If you are going to identify yourself by an ethnicity that is other than Yisrael, Yahuda, you're going in the wrong direction. Right.
Yeah,
now,
that
is not to say that it isn't appropriate to say, I am a goy, because it differentiates you from Yisrael. That's not by saying I am a race. There is no race called goy. It just means I am not ethnically, and it's a point of distinction to say almost all goy, in fact, all goyim institutions are anti-Yehuda and anti-Yah. So we can recognize that to be goy is bad unless, as a goy, you choose to identify with Yisrael, embrace Yisrael, be grafted into Yisrael. But that's a very different thing than saying, I am an African-American.
Yes.
Then he says, of the family of Yahweh. No, this person is not. You cannot identify yourself by an ethnicity such as African or by a political designation, American, and call yourself a member of Yahweh's family. You have violated the prerequisite.
You didn't walk away.
Right.
Have to walk away. So, yes. Correct.
And even the term Yahweh, you'll find in my books, it's part of these programs and nowhere else.
That's right.
So you want to use the transliteration Yahweh, then what you know and the family of Yahweh, you heard it here. Then he says, I was shocked that your comments about the crime situation of African Americans was so informed, to say the least. Now, what was my crime situation of African Americans? What I said is that
statistics.
Black Lives Matter movement is misguided because between 80 and 85% of African American murders are committed by other blacks. Now, I looked it up again. I looked it up in like 8 different Department of Justice reports. The number is 93%. So, was I misinformed? Okay.
Underinformed.
So, when you write somebody and you begin with a lie and to say that you were shocked as to how they were misinformed, when in fact what they said was accurate, how do you think that person is going to respond to you? Oh, gee, thank you for saying that I liked you and I told you the truth. That would Christians be saying, you know, God, let's just all get along. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, you lied about this Torah stuff. You're so damn misinformed about Paul. And I'm shocked by what you had to say about your damn Pesach and matzah and all that crap. And, you know, it's a shame that you're so misinformed about Christmas and Easter. But come on, God, in the name of Yahweh and in the family, you need to let us in. You need to see it our way. Forget what you did. Forget what you said. You need to see it our way. That's essentially how the first line of this letter begins.
Wasn't that the same argument of the Moabites?
Yeah.
I mean, in Lot's day, they were arguing. That was,
you know, so the Moabites say, "Hey, we want you to worship the Lord."
Yeah.
And we're going to entice you with our women to come worship the Lord. what was Yahweh's response? To say, hey, Moabites, hey, it's really cool. It's, you know, I understand that you prefer your Lord and that that's your opinion that he is good and you should use sex appeal of your women to lure my people into worshiping a false god. I'm sorry. You know, maybe I was just misinformed, but maybe not. And maybe the person who's misinformed is you, Moabite. And just to make the distinction that I don't like it, what did Yahweh say? Kill him.
Kill him.
Kill him. That's how tolerant
he was.
Kill him
with words.
Yeah. Kill him.
We kill with words. Yeah.
Now, then he said, as you should know from the Iran-Contra affair. Now, I know a lot about the Iran-Contra affair. I know far more than I've said this many times, far more about it than I can share on the air, because my chief of staff back in my last business led the investigation on Iran-Contra. I know a lot about it. Now, what Iran-Contra was, essentially, is that after he won the election, but before he was brought into office, I think was the timing, Ronald Reagan's handlers, and with Ronald Reagan's knowledge, negotiated with the Iranians that were holding our embassy members hostage because he had attacked Jimmy Carter for his ineptitude in freeing our hostages. And what he did is he agreed to sell the Iranians missiles. And that the money that he received from those, shouldn't personalize this, but the money that was received from the sale of those missiles was then used to fund the Contras fighting against the Sandinistas who were socialists in Nicaragua. That's Iran-Contra. You're a history buff. That's the public, and by the way, the private knowledge that I have only indicts the co-conspirators. It doesn't change those facts. Is there any part of that that is incorrect?
Not that I'm aware of. That's all I've ever read.
And it's very famous, right? So as we should know from Iran-Contra affair, the CIA and other elements of the U.S. government conspired. So now we're in a conspiracy. Now, Iran-Contra was not about the CIA. It was done through the Department of Defense. Weinberger was the chief operator.
Castro.
It was defunded through the Department of Defense, not the CIA. Of the U.S. government, and by the way, it wasn't the U.S. government at that time because it was done during that interim before he assumed office.
Took office. Yeah.
Conspired. The moment you use conspired, you're on the wrong side of Yahweh. To allow the Colombian drug cartels. There was no part of Iran-Contra that dealt with Colombia. Had nothing to do to sell cocaine in black communities. So what he wants to do is to blame the problems in African-American communities with the CIA, U.S. government, Ronald Reagan, and who know, and Colombian drug cartels, that is what occurred. Now, when did the drug problem in African-American communities with African-American gangs arise? Was it before or after the Iran-Contra affair?
It was long before the Iran-Contra.
Long before, wasn't it?
It's been there. No, yes, a long time.
Yes, yes. So, to sell cocaine in black communities and get a portion of the profits to support right-wing militia groups. No, the money to support right-wing militia groups came from the sale of the missiles to the Iranians.
To Iran.
So one of the challenges of conspiracy, and one of the reasons God hates it, is that conspirators who believe their conspiracy have to invent facts and have to deny reality. And you cannot be part of Yahweh's family. You cannot come to understand him. You cannot make correct decisions and be right if you're willing to take this approach, to change reality to suit your sensibilities and to deny the truth, which is precisely what is conveyed by Iran-Contra, was the U.S. government funding the sale of Colombian drugs to black communities to fund right-wing militia groups in Central America. Now, the reason conspiracies and religions prevail is you take one truthful statement and you pile a ton of lies upon it. It is truthful that Iran-Contra took the proceeds, not of cocaine, not of sales in the black community, but of the sale of missiles, not cocaine, to the Iranians, not black communities, to fund the right-wing Contras. So you got here a little glimmer of truth that is twisted to make the conspiracy appear credible. It's the basis of religion. So it's worth us exposing this, because this is the basis of religion and politics. And it's worth exposing Black Lives Matter, because over the last month, public opinion in the United States has shifted more dramatically than any other time in U.S. history in favor of this perception of widespread racism in the Justice Department and police force against African Americans, and therefore the African Americans are justified in their riots, their looting, and their protests. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. This is like America siding with the fakestinians. They want to be Palestinians, and their claims on Israel, when there is no such thing as a Palestinian. There hasn't been one for 2,000 plus years.
Yeah, correct.
And the land isn't called Palestine. It's Israel and Yehuda. And the people that are there aren't genetically or ethnically or culturally or politically related in any way to the
Palestinians.
Philistines of old, who were done in by the Assyrians.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, but you should not be surprised that there has been a direct and significant tie between the pro-Palestinian anti-Israel movements and Black Lives Matter since the very beginning.
So the question I would have, if they were to win some great victory somehow in this debate, it doesn't change the 93% that are being killed by black-on-black crime.
No.
Nothing would change. So it's the wrong target.
Oh, of course, it's the wrong target. It's not looking within the community and holding the community responsible, but instead, like all conspiracy, trying to blame other people for your bad situation.
Yeah.
Now,
when we do that,
we're incapable of taking responsibility, of being reasonable, of being rational, of being right. And if you cannot be these things, you cannot come into Yahweh's presence. So this person writing on behalf of Yahweh as part of his family is kidding himself.
Mm-hmm.
So you should know that the Iran-Contra affair, the CIA, and other elements of the U.S. government conspired to allow the Colombian drug cartels to sell cocaine and black communities and get a portion of the profits to support right-wing militia groups in Central America. It is also known that Clinton and Elder Bush were participating in this conspiracy. No, it is not known, because they didn't. Bill Clinton was as pro-African American as probably any man that's ever occupied the White House. I think he was more pro-African American, more overtly pro-African American than even Obama. He would no more take the approach of sponsoring a conspiracy to sell drugs to the African American communities than the man in the moon. Conspiracy. And yes, I said conspiracy. He's proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a common denominator among all conspiratorialists beyond the fact that they are irrational. and that is they're all living failed lives. They all feel that they have somehow been deprived of what they deserve and are seeking to blame someone else for their lot in life rather than accept responsibility. That is the nature of conspiracy, which is why this person spoke of conspiracy. He said, of course, this led, now this is a non sequitur, to the escalation of crime and killing as rival gangs, impoverished community, fought for drug sales. It's called a non sequitur. One thing does not follow another, and the other is a false premise. The facts are not accurate. At the same time, the music industry, which is controlled by Yehudim and still is pushing crime rap music onto the minds of youth in these communities. Blame the Jews.
Yeah, that snuck in.
Yep, the Jews are in control of the music industry. No, they're not. Jews don't write rap music. They have no control, no influence over the lyrics. Rap music for the black community is written by, guess who?
Black people.
I think there is an example, Jewish investor, who provided the capital for an African-American rapper to essentially have his own label. Now, he has no say as to what the rapper writes. He has no say in the promotion of the rapper's music. And I want to tell you, the rap music is disgusting. It poisons people's minds. But if he hadn't, if he said, okay, I'll invest in all enterprise except if it's run by a black person or if my partner has to be a black person, then that these races would condemn the Jews for unfairly. And if they invest in their community, they are blamed for promoting something that they have no influence over.
But so many Jews in the 60s stood with the marchers in Alabama.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, this is how dare they? How dare you make those
the
comments?
The opposite of what people claim is almost always true. And by the way, today there really is no control over the music industry because of the nature of
independent contractors.
Yeah, right. And, and virtually anybody can be an independent contractor. So we've got now blame the Jews.
So now you're zero for zero. I mean, he's zero for zero.
Oh, no, he's mega, negative 100. Yes!
Negative
if Yahweh could use David, who committed adultery, you know, I'm here to tell you, from God's perspective, adultery is essentially meaningless. That in the sense of a man having intercourse with more than one woman. Times that Yahweh chastised David for having 7 wives and 10 concubines.
Or Jacob.
But listen for me. Yes, now, is Jacob not Israel?
Yes, sir. That's the change of name.
How many wives did Jacob have?
Well, he had 2 and 2 concubines, I believe.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, is Yahweh and they, those wives and concubines, created the tribes of Israel?
Yes, they did.
And Yahweh say, boy, the moment you have sex with another woman out of wedlock, you are an adulterer. So I can't use you anymore. Just the opposite is true.
Yeah,
you know, this fixation on sexuality lies at the heart of the perversion that is religion. You know, most of these religious wackos that claim to be the Messiah, that claim to be God, that are cult leaders, or even just priests in the Roman Catholic Church or pastors in Protestant churches, they're sexual predators.
seem to be.
Well, they're speaking out against promiscuity.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
To cover it up as the Messiah and returning king, then he can use a man who is not shed. So now we're going to ad hominem on me. His upper class Presbyterian bias on race to be a messenger in the last days. How influenced do you think I am by Presbyterian biases? Can you tell me where you think my Presbyterian biases have influenced anything that I have said or written since I began this program or began these books?
No, and my association with you, and I know you.
I do have a Presbyterian bias. I am disgusted by the Presbyterian Church, and particularly the way that they deal with Israel.
Yeah,
I have a bias. My bias is against them.
Yes.
Upper class.
No, you do not have a bias.
Upper, yeah. When people start putting people into classes, they lose me. People work, they don't work. By the way, speaking of working, and this person wants reparations for slavery, which, you know, ended in the southern states in 1865, ended in the northern states, that is really the United States, because they defeated the Confederacy. It ended in the late 1700s in the United States.
Yes.
And they want reparations for something that was, 1700 versus 200 years ago. And so, yeah, but what no one wants to figure out is since 1965, 43% of African Americans are net beneficiaries of government handouts for redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
Reparations, if you will. 43%. Mm-hmm. Caucasians, 10 to 11% are on some form of government handout. And so it's four times more prevalent in the African-American community where they are, I'm going to use a term that is a pejorative term, but it's an accurate term as it relates to those 43% of the people. And it would not be an accurate term if it wasn't generation. If people used a soup kitchen, if they used public housing to get back on their feet, if they used government assistance to eat and to live while they search for a new job, then this term would not be accurate. But when lives, times are spent on it, it's accurate. The term is parasite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have about times the percentage of African Americans that are parasites than are Caucasians. Now, that means that 10% of American Caucasians who have decided, I don't want to work, I'm just going to live on the government, shame on you. You know, I was on the beach here not too long ago, and a black woman said, hell, why should I work? The government pays for everything. One of the problems that welfare created with Lyndon Johnson back in 1965 was that it was rightfully initially targeted at widows and young children who had no right their own destitute and needed help. And boy, you know, helping people that are abandoned in that way, widows and orphans, that was the original premise. That's a good thing. But what it did is it created a pay scale for that the more children the unwed mother had, the more she'd get paid.
Yes.
And so what we did is we created a scenario where black men were impregnating black women such that they were receiving more and more government payments. And it became a cultural thing where the number of black children that are born without a nuclear family, a father and a mother, guiding them, supporting them, is much higher than it is in any other culture. And it has caused a problem, whether or not you want to admit it or not. The facts are the facts, and there's a problem. The problem has nothing to do, by the way, with ethnicity. This is not a skin color issue. It's a cultural issue. When Yahweh told us to walk away from our country, which was the influence of Babylon, to walk away from our father's house, which would be the family of man, and from our society, what he's talking about is cultural influences. And the things that are affecting this community are cultural. And there's a broken culture.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, ad hominem is not a good way to debate, to criticize someone, because this person, he's going to finish this with two more sentences, and there isn't a single refutation of anything that I said. If you're going to say that what I said was wrong and misleading, you ought to state what I said that was wrong and correct it. There wasn't a single statement to do so. It says, however, I must let you know how I feel about your statements. This is not the first time that I have been offended. You should be offended. You've introduced yourself by your ethnicity and by your patriotism, your country. You have endorsed and are promoting conspiracies which God is overtly against. And so everything that I'm going to say is going to be offensive to you because you're wrong. Now, I wrote this person back. And what I said to the individual was fairly simple, fairly straightforward. I'll see if I can find it here in a timely fashion. If not, then we'll move on here. But let's see. Responded, I think, 30 times.
Well, he is talky.
I can't find it. What I would like to share is this. This person now has demanded that he be allowed to debate. And I wrote them back and said, if you had a...
Hello?
Well, hello, Kirk. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
Who knows what?
Email you.
Yeah. Who knows how we got
there? So.
Yeah, we got connected. The last point I want to make two more points, then we'll move on. One is that because of the way people are responding to COVID-19, for example, and accepting the government's deprivation of liberty and livelihood, it has to be exposed and condemned for people to understand what's happening around them. Black Lives Matter misappropriated a tragic situation, and what they are perpetrating is deceptive, and it's deceptive in a very negative way, and it needs to be exposed and condemned. What I do want to do is to say that there's more to the that story, the George Floyd story, than people are willing to acknowledge. Do you know that George Floyd had fentanyl in his system, which is a drug far more dangerous than heroin?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was driving under the influence.
Did we discuss? Yeah.
Yeah. He also had just taken methamphetamine, which makes an individual aggressive. And so he had lost his capacity for judgment, and he was now aggressive. Do you also know that this myth that he didn't try to resist arrest is a lie? When there's a video now, it's been available for most of the time. It shows the police, after they appropriately arrested this man, for being behind the wheel of a car, obviously intoxicated under the influence, and passing a counterfeit bill, actually stealing as well. And they arrested him to put him in the back of the police car. He started kicking them and fighting with the police and resisting arrest in a very aggressive fashion. And the reason he got outside the car with the cop putting his knee on him was because he kicked his way, kicking against the cops to slide across the seat to fall out of the car. So they restrained him because he was so... No one wants to talk about that, do they?
Apparently not.
We get ourselves in trouble. One of the things I learned as a pilot is that you never allow yourself to make a third mistake, because the third mistake will very often kill you. And so what happened here with George Floyd, he did not deserve to die. And the police, he had a terrible day. The guy's not a racist. His wife separated from them the day before. He shouldn't have been on duty. He is, like most cops, as a former military, he has too little regard for life and is way too authoritarian. But he's not a racist. And George Floyd should not have been killed, but he was far from an innocent man. He made the bad decision to ingest fentanyl. He made the bad decision to, on top of that, ingest methamphetamine. He made the bad decision to put everyone in that community in harm's way by driving his car under the influence. He made a bad decision by carrying and passing a counterfeit bill. He made a bad decision by going back into the store and stealing the cigarettes. And then he made a bad decision by getting violent with the police and resisting his own arrest. He made way too many bad decisions, which is why that happened to him. All right, that's enough of Black Lives
Matter.
Well,
let me just say one little thing. Okay. If somebody comes up you like a cop and all, and they're in the wrong and you're in the right, or you're just a neutral party and they're in the wrong, then you have every right to call them on it. And you can make as much noise as you want to. Don't kick them. don't.
Right.
They'll just give them an excuse to kill you. I mean, really.
Yeah, no. It's like the guy in Atlanta. It's like the guy in Atlanta. He was drunk. He fell asleep in his car. The cop was extraordinarily polite and restrained. But he said, you know, I'm going to have to give him a breathalyzer test. I said, you know, you're driving under the influence, and I'm going to have to take you in. That's not appropriate. But they, you know, started to put the handcuffs on him, and he went crazy. Started attacking the cop, took his taser and turned around and was going to tase the man. Now, should the cop have killed him, used deadly force against him? No.
Absolutely not.
But you just don't do stuff like that if you want to live. That is unbelievably stupid. You know, every decision that George Floyd made that day was stupid. You know, it's so.
What a way.
Stop blaming other people. There's no justification for the Black Lives Matter movement, or for the riots and the protests. And one of the things that I have seen, I've seen a lot of it, is groups of black gangs, 3, 4, 5, 6 black youths. Take a white person coming out of the store and sucker punching them, and then when the person falls down, kicking them, hitting them, beating them to a pulp, and then robbing them. It's far worse, far, far, far worse than what happened to George Floyd. Now, do you see Caucasians out marching, saying white lives matter, when they would be justified in doing so, and yet they don't? We have a world that is that is really, really screwed up in its thinking, and this particular individual that wrote me is indicative of a world that's lost their ability to think rationally. Returning to the psalm, Mizmor 22. And all of my most substantial bones are stretched, separated, and out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted, wasting away, along with my body. Like sun-baked dust, my vigor and strength are withered and failed. And my tongue cleaves to the roof of my mouth. So upon the precipice of the dust of death, they have placed me. It's Mizmor 22, 14, and 15, describing the effect of Roman-style crucifixion, written by Dode around 1000 BCE, fully 1,000 years before the events that he's describing played out, and 800 years before the Roman style of crucifixion was even invented. That's a pretty extraordinary prophecy.
That's an incredible prophecy. I shared it with somebody not too long ago, and they were just stunned. They said, wow, wow. And I said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All of it is precisely true. When we didn't know this really until about 50 years ago with modern medicine. We now know what happens if you suspend an individual like this. And, you know, crucifixion is still something, it's not done with nails anymore, but where people are on occasion tied up. It happened in Nagasaki, Japan, right before the bomb was dropped. Some Japanese took Christian ministers out and crucified them. And it's the Islamic jihadists, primarily the Islamic State, have crucified many, many people in Syria and Iraq. So we do have examples of people being crucified, and the medical community has analyzed them, and they describe the heart muscles, the fact that all of the joints are stretched out, particularly the shoulder and elbow joints are stretched out of place, disjointed, and that the person's lungs began to fill up with fluid, and the rest of their body, particularly their mouth, become like sun-baked dust, dry, and that the strength of the body melts away because the diaphragm doesn't work when the person is hanging from their arms and it's stretched, and it's so painful to push up on the nails on the feet. But when the person does that and they're hanging from their hands, their lungs fill with fluids. There is no distribution of oxygen to the muscles, particularly if they don't exercise their thighs and calves, which standing up against those nails would be excruciating. Then there's no way of circulating the blood and therefore the oxygen. And so one's strength simply melts away. The tongue does cleave to the roof of the mouth, and the person is the moment they're nailed to the upright pole cross like that, they're on the precipice of death. Did you analyze any of those words, Kirk?
Well, I did. I did a couple. I unfortunately, time has been a precious commodity this week, and I haven't.
Yes.
I only began a couple of things, but it was this was the interesting part to me, that sometimes when I do these things, I really feel like God was letting me in on some things that you see, and it's not your version versus mine or something like that. It's just their most fascinating words, and I'll tell you a couple of them, which was I thought this is a story, obviously, of Yahusha being crucified. And you have Yabesh, which can easily just be said is dried, translated as to be dried up. But it also means to be withered and ashamed, which I thought a little would. And I always ask myself, does that apply here? Well, let's look a little further. You've got the Yod, Bet, and the teeth there, and what you have there is Yah lifts up the house and the family, and it also it nourishes them. And I'm thinking about, what is he doing here? He is lifting us up through this horrible, horrible act with somebody taking the place of us. And another is when I looked at the, I was trying to figure out how does shame come into it. Well, the root word there is the bet. I'm sorry, it's the, I'm having an old age moment here in the shin. I was going to say sin instead of the shin. The bet and the shin. And that is shame in the sense of being withered up, but it's also the stench and dried up of wetlands and ponds, as example you would use. And how does that all fit in? Well, it fits in because Yah is lifting us away from decay, of course, but it also fits in because this is the lamb where the hands of the priest would put on the hands and they would transfer all the sins of all of us onto it. So the stench is pretty bad. So I just marvel really at these words and a simple word like Moweth and Muwet, which are both written exactly the same way. The first one is easily translated by most people as just death, but it means to also to kill. This is interesting. It also means to be moot, like a dead point in a debate. Mm-hmm. So think a minute about Hasatan. This is to silence Hasatan. You know, there's no accusation here. I paid the price. These are my children. I can take them. So I just thought that was rather. And then Muth, M-U-W-T-H, is the way we spell it probably phonetically, is to die, but it is to die as a penalty by a human authority, as opposed to it could be die by natural causes, but that would be the context here as well. It is... a physical death, which is the mem wa ta, and mem and the ta is so interesting because you have man's mortality, but you also have the chaos of a mem, which represents water and oftentimes the sea, and it's the mark of chaos. And interesting, the cross sticks of the ta, of course, is not only a sign, but it's the upright pole or the signpost along the way. This is such a heavy, sad thing to read because it's so gory. So I find it tough. I found it tough the first time we translated it, read it, even though I read it many times. And analyzing these words, it's interesting that these words have that. I don't notice that in our English language to have those kind of, that kind of depth of meaning.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Passover lamb is always killed mercifully. You know, there's a very,
very quick.
An appropriate ways to do it. The death is quick, and it is it's killed to be consumed as food for the family. This Passover lamb, as Yosha, was not
slaughtered.
Killed mercifully.
No.
He was tortured.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was tortured by Roman authorities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would have been if he had been killed in accordance with the Torah, I would have been merciful. But it was not because it was man's rebellion against God, his religious and political rebellion against God, was that the thing that was being overcome by the sacrificial death and of the Lamb. And so it was poetic in a way that the perpetrators were a political and religious institution that were exceedingly abusive. Mizmor 22:16, for indeed, a contemptible scum and abased yelpers have surrounded me. A united community providing the testimony of the corrupt establish a destructive annual cycle to denigrate what I am doing.
Yes.
They broke into, or they bore into, my hands and my feet. Beginning at the first part of this, when I read something like self-identifying person based on his ethnicity and his politics and his conspiracies, right? It's hard not to see contemptible scum in a base universe. And their attempt is to agitate, to bring you into their world. And they think that they're great debaters, as I'm sure these who were contemptible scum and abased yelpers, these loud and attacking people of a violent nature and traitors. They think that they've got the market cornered on truth. They think that they're equipped to debate. It is very much like the actual story of what happened in Sodom, where the community wanted to give Yahweh's Moloch an earful. They wanted to tell Yahweh's Moloch what they thought was appropriate and right. And they said, oh yeah, you have to listen to us. That's the constant thing that this individual kept on saying. You have to give me my opportunity to explain my position. Well, they continuously yap away, providing testimony, which is corrupt.
You know, he could buy his own program and talk on the air if he wants to. He won't use your dime to insult you.
But that's exactly what's happening here. A united community providing the testimony of the corrupt, of those who are wrong, establish a destructive annual cycle to denigrate what I'm doing. And somebody that's going to denigrate the Jews, blame Jews, somebody who's going to advance conspiracies and all manner of lies to tie to slander someone who is speaking on behalf of Yah's testimony is doing exactly what this is. They're denigrating what I'm doing by creating the testimony of that which is wrong, disturbing, evil, injurious. It happens to this day. And the religion of Christianity is based on this. The religion of Judaism, to a large degree, is based upon this. Both religions
insult God.
Fail to accept Yahusha as what he was, the Passover lamb. One turned him into everything he wasn't, the Son of God and Messiah. And the other just nullified his existence. They're both wrong.
Yeah.
So one over-aggrandized him, giving him all manner of titles that he did not deserve and were inappropriate. The Passover lamb is not king. The Passover lamb is not the Messiah. The Passover lamb is not God or the Son of God. So one did that, and the other pretended like he never existed. So if there's no Passover lamb, you got a real problem. That's why we spoke about the Passover Seder, where the lamb is lacking.
Left out.
Now, the last part of it, which is they bore into my hands and feet. They dug into and pierced my hands and feet. This is then preserved by 5/6 head psalms and has a Kerub and Sereva Karav, to dig, bore, pierce. And the Masoretic text has Ha'ari, like a lion, for my hands and feet. So,
makes no sense.
Because this was so specific of Roman-style crucifixion, the leaders of Judaism, in creating their arguments against the Passover lamb, literally changed the word of God to suit their interests, and they got caught. They got caught because this segment of this psalm is available now in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and it proves emphatically that the Masoretes.
Not what he says. Yeah.
Not what he said. He said they bore into my hands and my feet, which is precisely what Roman crucifixion entailed, and it was a prophecy written 1,000 years before this event. It was a profoundly important prophecy because what it does is it explains what happened on Pesach Matzah and Bukurim from an eyewitness 1,000 years before. happens, which would cause any rational and informed person to recognize that Dode, who wrote this psalm, was inspired by Yahweh, and therefore to pay attention to what he had to say. That is what the Masoretes destroyed.
So I know they know that they're doing this.
Yeah, they do.
Do they just not believe that Yahweh is real, or they just have no fear of him because they're so much in league with Satan at the time? They just are they that delusional?
Oh, they don't. They don't know Yahweh, and they believe that they're empowered over him
to do so.
That was Rabbi Akiva's whole claim to fame. Yeah. Yeah, we recognize that Yahweh is into free will, and therefore volition, and therefore there's one of him, and there are 10 of us. So when we hold a vote on any subject, the one of him is outvoted by the 10 of us when we disagree.
I don't know how you sell that, but okay.
But he did. He did.
One of my good friends,
Dr. Jeff, is harassed mercilessly by another doctor who just loves the rabbinic Judaism. And, you know, he's trying to say, you should honor the Akiva and recognize Akiva's authority. And Dr. Jeff will communicate back to him. Wait a minute. Akiva is the person who recognized a false Messiah. And the basis of that false Messiah, he brought the power and the legions of Rome down on his people, got them expelled from the land. It is why they were enslaved in Europe. It's why the land was salted and renamed Philistia, and therefore in the Latin translated to English, Palestine. That diaspora led directly to the Holocaust. He's the man who has had a greater negative effect on you than anyone else. And he was wrong. And you're going to tell me that I should show admiration for him over the words of Yahweh. And the religious Jew would say, of course. So yes, they know. This then reads, "And I will pour out upon the house of Dode."
Christian.
This is the one place where it is Doid, beloved. It is the only time among 1,076 occurrences where DWD, Daleth, Wa, Daleth, was scribed, that it was written Daleth, Wa, Yod, Daleth. So there is a yod or a y in it this one time, and it's the only time out of 1,076 appearances. Tell you the reason why, but I think that full disclosure and accuracy is always in our interest. So this is the one time where it is do it.
Well, it's a good-looking word. Well, let's work on that one. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, the only difference, Dode is the doorway with the wa showing to connect. So it's the doorways
being connected.
Well,
it becomes Yah's increase.
Yeah, so it's the doorway to the cup. So very much could be the doorway to heaven being connected to the doorway of the covenant. And Dode was called the living embodiment of the covenant. And Dode is clearly Yahweh's son, and therefore in heaven. And so, Dode could be the two doorways, the doorway of Pesach and the doorway of Yahweh's home being connected. Doid would just add the hand of God. So it's the two doorways being connected by the hand of God. Anyway, it says, "I will pour out upon the house of Dode and upon those who dwell in Jerusalem a spirit of compassion and acceptance and of requesting mercy while being favored." Wow. What is the, if you look at, and I did this because of the chapter of coming home, that three or four chapters preceding this, I was trying to understand the basis of replacement theology, because it becomes very clear that the very root of replacement theology is stealing all of the titles that Yahweh afforded Dodd and giving them to the Christian Jesus. So the Christian Jesus is artificially raised in importance, and he is thought of as everything other than his purpose, which is the Passover lamb. And then that expands to Christians taking for themselves all the promises made to Israel. And if you look at the basis of replacement theology, of course, it exists in Paul's letters, where Paul, in his first public debate, is saying that you Jews don't deserve heaven, you don't deserve salvation, so I'm going to turn to the Gentiles. So Paul is saying that that God doesn't think, his God doesn't think Jews deserve salvation, but the Gentiles do. Now, if you read Matthew, and the portions of Matthew that were likely written by Eusebius in the early 4th century on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church, it's filled with statements that suggest that because Jews allegedly killed Jesus, that God decided that they no longer were going to be his chosen people, no longer deserved salvation.
Deserve mercy.
That God was now going to hate them and was going to replace them with different people. In this case, was going to replace them with the Goyim. That is the purpose of the parable that is so convoluted of the workers that killed the landowner's son. And so what we're reading here is that here is the moment Yahusha was killed as the Passover lamb. And rather than God saying, "Oh, because you Jews, you went and killed me, therefore you no longer deserve salvation, therefore all the promises I made to you are no longer in effect, and I'm going to replace you with the Gentile church," God is saying just the opposite. "And I will pour out on the house of Dodd and upon all those who dwell in Jerusalem, a spirit of compassion and acceptance and of requesting mercy while being favored." Well, the house of Dodd is Yehuda. Jerusalem sure as hell ain't in the Vatican.
No.
And at this very moment, God is saying the opposite of the foundational claim of Christianity. Then it says, "Therefore they," who would be they? "They shall look." Who would be they?
Mm-hmm. Well, those are the Yehudim returning.
Yeah. Here, the house of Dodd, Yehudah.
The house of Dodd, yeah.
And those who live in Jerusalem. Right.
Yes.
So, therefore they, this would be Yehudim, Jews, shall look to me, whom they have actually pierced, and they shall lament for him as one cries when reunited with an only child, anguished for him, similar to the anguish suffered over their firstborn child. Who is the firstborn child of Yahweh? The Bakor of Yahweh? Dodd. How... When I first tried to translate this, I was all confused. So the first part of it is a direct attack against Judaism. "Therefore, they shall look," and really Christianity, "they shall look to me." Me here is Yahweh. "Therefore, they shall look to me, whom they have actually pierced." And so what Yahweh was saying is that I provided the lamb, and they shall lament for him. Now, me is Yahweh. Him can't be Yahweh, can it?
No.
No. So who's him?
The only child. That's
Toad.
Yeah, that has to be
Toad.
Yeah,
I will
okay.
pour out on the house of Toad, and they shall lament for him as one cries when reunited with an only child. The chosen child, the son of Yahweh, is Toad. Israel is going to be reunited with Toad, which is why it's being called the house of Toad. And so Yahweh is saying that, yeah, they're going to look up to me whom they pierced. But while they're doing it, they're going to cry out to be reunited with an only child. They're going to be anguished for him, similar to the anguish suffered over a firstborn child. The anguish is all of these years, our Messiah was right before us. All of these years, our King was there, our great defender, our shepherd. All of these years, for 3,000 years, we ought to have known and celebrated the Son of God because he is the most famous Yehud of all time.
Hey, don't you find it just so remarkable this last couple of years? And there it was. It just blows me away.
Yes, yeah.
I just still to this day, I get little tingles. Like, wow.
Yes. Yeah, and how did we miss it all of that time? But there it is. It's Dod that is returning with Yahweh, and the reconciliation isn't with the Passover lamb. The reconciliation is with their Messiah. With the firstborn of Yahweh. With
well, they're going to like him when he shows up, too.
Yeah.
He got one. Whoa. He's going to have 5 days. So, yeah, that's going to be something.
Yes. I can count all of my bones. They stare at me, gloating, and my misfortune. This is now Dod recounting what he is witnessing. From the perspective of Yahweh, of Yahusha. So I can count all my bones. That's, you know, it's an interesting statement because counting one's bones is taken by Christians to say, well, my bones were not broken and that the, you know, they wrote to make it appear as if Yahusha fulfilled this prophecy, although they don't know his name is Yahusha, they will say, that, you know, the Romans didn't break his legs for a swift death. And so, yeah, so what they would typically do. But that's kind of odd because, well, he died immediately thereafter. And the reason they break the legs is so that you would die quickly, which is exactly what happened to him. So it's a conflicted story that doesn't hold up in it. And it is highly likely somebody searching this and saying, well, we got to make our guy fit. So this shofar, I can count, measure, and make an accounting of, I can relate to. Stem is the essential elements that comprise the body. So he's saying, you know, I am aware of my body. I am aware of my physical nature is really what's being said here. And as the Passover lamb, it is his estem of his essential physical nature that is being recorded, being measured, because it's the body of his body is serving as the Passover lamb. And I didn't even see that until this very moment. But he is not saying that his bones were not broken. There's a Hebrew word, in fact, there's 4 or 5 for broken. And there are Hebrew words for bones that aren't a stem, which is the essential essence of someone. And so this isn't saying that my bones are not broken. What it's saying is that at this moment, I can measure, I can account for. The thing that matters now is my essential physical nature. Because it's the essential physical nature is all that's on that upright pole now serving as the Passover lamb.
But that word also means, besides just counting or numbering something, it also means to record a story.
Right. And so we're recording the story of
recording the story
of
for you
the,
to, yeah.
physical nature of the lamp.
Right. Yeah.
And they stare at me, gloating at in my misfortune. This is Ra'ah Ba'ani, delighted with what they see and envision. Now, the Romans were savages. Their bloodlust was partially moderated by bringing the legs of the crucifixion victims, effectively shutting down their ability to breathe. And while this sounds cruel, it was done to expedite death. And so as I read this, even my most recent edit pass, I fell into the trap of saying, well, that's what this must be, that legs were not broken. But that is not what's being said here. I can recount, I can record. I am the essence of my physical essence, my physical being. Look at me as a physical body serving as the lamb for Ra'ah, for the purpose of Ra'ah. What is Ra'ah? It is evil. It is that which is wrong. It's missing the way. That's why. That's why I'm. That's why I'm here. Is
really dysfunctional. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, that is both the problem and the joy of doing this. You know, this is a book now that is done and ready to go to print. And here we've seen two insights that I didn't pick up previously. And so
and the whole team of yours is going, oh wow.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the nature of what we do. We're constantly learning. You're constantly seeing new things, and constantly growing. That's that is both the fun of it, but it's also the challenge of it. As the guy that's still in the opening chapter of Yada Yada. And is has gone back to the beginning to rewrite the opening chapter of Yada Yada like 20 times, and is still not comfortable with the result. It says they divide my.
I heard a wailing in Idaho, somewhere in Idaho. I heard somebody wail.
And for my clothing, they cast lots. They get down to their knees to toss pebbles to claim a portion. Oh, by the way, if Yosha's clothing was stolen with a game of lots by the Romans, when he came out of the this myth of bodily resurrection, did he go to a haberdashery? Was there a needless markup? Did he was he have a preeminent version of Amazon.com? It was there a Kmart nearby? A Kohl's? I mean, what did he do?
Well, I always went to Moe's Lilienthal back home, but this no, I don't think so.
You know, and if they're saying, oh no, you know, he's God, but no, he could just make whatever kind of clothes that he wanted for the occasion. Well, if he could just make something out of nothing, why is it you think that the body that he occupied was not also made the same way? E equals MC squared. He just made it out of the energy. Yes.
Out of light.
Right. If you're going to accept that the apparel can be that way, why not the body? And why now would you believe in the bodily resurrection if you're going to have garmental instant
you got real problems.
Yes, you're going to have instant garments. But you're not going to fathom the concept that it wasn't his physical body. So perhaps that's the reason for the line, is for you to think it through. This this physical apparel was gone, and so was the physical visible aspect of the man. It was gone. Then it says, but you, Yahweh. Wait a minute, it doesn't say, but you, Jesus, doesn't say you, the Lord. You, Hashem, doesn't say, but you, Allah.
No. Definitely says Yahweh.
Says, but you, Yahweh, do not distance yourself for a prolonged period of time. The challenge here is really trying to understand what is transpiring. And so you have the Passover lamb, in this case, with Yahweh's nefesh soul, in all likelihood. And when we say that, we have to be very careful, because Yahweh's soul is not to Yahweh the way our soul is to us. Our soul is to us is really the only meaningful part of us. It's the only part of us that's going to go into the mm-hmm. next life. It is the sum total of our personality, our attributes, our memories. The sum total of what's important about us is our soul. And with Yahweh, his nefesh would be very much like him having a probe, a means of inserting himself, a portion of himself, an aspect of some of his character and nature into someone or something. So
I thought Yahweh the probe was an excellent analogy, by the way.
Yeah, Yahweh was undiminished by having his soul out on loan, because Yahweh's life is not based upon having a soul. A soul is like Yahweh has this box of tools and implements that he can use to interact with humans. A malach is one. The set apart spirit is one. His words are another, and he has the soul over here that he can use to do the same thing. So it's an implement, a probe for Yahweh. But Yosha, with that soul, would have had an identity with Yahweh that would have been closer than most, other than the experience that Moshe had, or the experience that Dod had, or the experience that Yashayah had. It's got to be in that league. And of course, at some point, the set apart spirit came upon Yosha, as it did to Dod, and as it did Moshe as well. And so he had, as we have had, an intimate experience with Yahweh. And if that intimacy with Yahweh, that connection with Yahweh, is severed, the one thing you're going to say is, listen, I understand there's a purpose to this, but don't distance yourself from me for a long period of time. And so that is what we hear this soul, where it began, my God, why have you distanced yourself from me? That is what is being said. And he's saying, you know, I understand what's going to happen now with matzah. I'm going into the black hole. My soul is, and there's a purpose for this. I understand it. I'm willing to do it. But let's not prolong this any more than it has to be.
I found that really interesting how you came to that, because he wants to do this, and he wants to be successful at it. And I never, I understand he should, but I just never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Well, you know, Yosha was here for a single purpose.
He really wanted to do this. I mean,
his purpose in being here was to serve as the Passover lamb. So being the Passover lamb is not fun. You don't want to follow the Passover lamb. You don't want to emulate the Passover lamb. You don't want to be the Passover lamb. Being the Passover lamb, you don't want to worship the Passover lamb. You don't want to pray to the Passover lamb. I passed this Catholic church that is in the center of the island, and you know, it has Jesus is the Savior. No, he's not. It's Passover lamb. Mm-hmm. Jesus is King. No, he's not.
No, don't. No,
the lamb is not King. Jesus is the Creator. No.
Yeah, no.
Jesus is your friend. No, the Passover lamb is not your friend. So this is Yosha doing what he's called to do. You know, I have struggled with the ideas of all of these prophecies speaking about what we're doing, whether it's Nakri or Choder or comprising the neck or even witnessing in the last days, should that be the case. There's nobody wants that responsibility. You know, it's like this fellow that was so slanderous. He made certain that he slandered what God said. He said, yeah, it's obvious that these things are said of you, and then he slandered me because of it. It's not fun. That's something that nobody wants to bring on themselves. It's cool to have opportunity without responsibility, but this is really responsibility. And so what we see with Yosha is the same thing we saw with Dod a lot of the time in his words, which is that, okay, I'm going to do this thing. Nobody in their right mind wants to do this thing, but this thing needs to be done. And in the end, whatever displeasure or whatever sacrifice, whatever is maybe less appealing to me, is really minuscule by comparison to how important this thing is to accomplish. So I think that's why Yosha said, listen, I get it. I've got the mindset of God. I see it from his perspective. I'm here to do this. Let's get it done. This is this next term, and this title is only used once, whether it's a title or a name. It's only used once in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But it appears to be the name of the set-apart spirit. So it's Iyaluth, my Iyaluth, my source of strength and help. Please come quickly and be ready to assist me so that I am effective. Iyaluth is being used here as a divine title in conjunction with the set-apart spirit. This proper noun appears this one time in the whole of the Torah. Iyaluth is the feminine form of Eyal, and thus is the power behind the Passover lamb, opening the doorway to heaven. The name reveals that our spiritual mother is Iyal, devoted to providing us with the ability to do whatever is required, empowering us so that we benefit from the Pesach Eyal and find the doorway to heaven. Quite literally, Iyalu is our helper, our source of strength. The Iyalu provides aid and support in our time of need. She is the power and strength of God in our lives. And so when we see a statement like this, we have Yosha recorded by Dod giving a name to the set-apart spirit. And is calling the set-apart spirit our source of strength and help. The one who makes me effective and influential. You know, when we read not long ago in Yeshaya 8, and then in 11, mostly in 11, the statements regarding all of the things that the set-apart spirit was doing on behalf of the Choder so that the Choder could be an effective witness regarding the neck. This is a similar statement that is calling the Iyaluth the source of strength and help, the one who makes all of this possible. And it is a particularly interesting term because the term is also related to the term that Yahweh used regarding Chawa, as Chawa was created really to be of help and assistance to Adam. So this is God saying that he understands the role of mother. And the role of mother is to support her children. So it's a very powerful concept. And it's a title that is so seldom used and is so descriptive. And it's saying, Eli, please come quickly and be ready to assist me so that I am effective, La Ezra Ani. Yosha was willing to do this, but he wanted to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's reasonable. You know, I don't want to do it for nothing, I want to be effective. The only way that he can be effective if he is empowered by the set-apart spirit. Because the universal sacrifice of Yahweh's soul as and the body of Yahusha as the Pesach Eil, as the Passover lamb, is only effective if the action is supported by God. And this is God's means to do that. But more importantly, Yahusha is headed to Sheol, which is the equivalent of a black hole. If that soul is not liberated from Sheol, and thus we are liberated as covenant children from the ways of man and human corruption, then it's all for nothing. So he wants the set-apart spirit to come quickly and be ready to help so that his role fulfilling matzah is successful.
Wow.
That's the mindset that we should all have as children of the covenant.
Yeah.
We ought to care about what God cares about and ought to be willing to make sacrifices on behalf of the family. If you and I spend hours and hours each week trying to understand these words and then share them, we are making a sacrifice on behalf of the family, because this is what Yahweh wants. And as much as he is affording us, it's the least we can do. And when we do these things, God empowers us to be effective. That's what's the example that Dode is communicating in this situation.
Yeah.
And it should be all of our desires. No, we shouldn't. I do not have the desire. You do not have the desire to serve as the Pesach Eil. That would be pretty stupid.
No.
The role has already been fulfilled. Thank you very much. We should not have the desire, nor do we have the ability, nor is there be any purpose of us fulfilling matzah. There is a lot we can do in terms of like correctly translating these words, correctly communicating their intent. There's a lot we can do.
Sharing the story. Absolutely.
Yes, and sharing the story. And so that is precisely what we're doing. May it be your will to liberate me, delivering, not all, my soul from the horror of desolation and ruin, from the hand and power of the contemptible scum and abased yelpers.
Well, I'm blaming there.
Yeah. Now, by the way, Kaleb is an interesting term. It is also the Hebrew word for dog. And are you familiar with the Hebrew word kol?
Kol? All?
Yeah. Yeah, it means all.
K-O-L,
all?
Yeah.
How about lev? Are you familiar with the Hebrew word lev?
Yes, of course, heart.
Heart. So the Hebrew word for dog is? All heart.
Kaleb, all heart. Wow, I missed that. Very good.
So that's
good.
That
I like it. All heart. You hear that paint?
Yeah. Azure and paint ought to know that dogs are all heart. So it's a marvelous term. But in this particular case, it is being used negatively as contemptible scum and abased yelpers. But keep in mind that the conspiratorial types, the religious types, political types, they lash out emotionally. It's a no brain.
That's a good equation. I mean, that's a good
So that analogy. Is really what's happening here. The Black Lives Matter people are all emotion, no thinking. Those that have accepted them and say that they have, that they support their cause, are all heart and brain. Kaleb. So may it be your will to liberate me, delivering me. One of the things that we have come to appreciate about the covenant, we've seen this, first recognized this over a decade ago. is that the covenant's not about salvation.
No.
The covenant's about becoming immortal. The covenant is about becoming perfected. The covenant is about being adopted into God's family.
Yep.
The covenant is about being enriched and empowered. That's what the covenant is about. It's becoming God's children and inheriting all he has to give, engaging in an eternal relationship with our Creator. That's what the covenant is all about. There isn't a single benefit of the covenant that would be yasha. But what we came to realize is even the term yasha, salvation, that's not its primary meaning. It's a derivative meaning. Primary meaning is to liberate. And the way that God goes about saving his people is freeing them from human oppression, from human lies, from human corruptions. And so what Yosha is saying, and Dode is recording here, may be it your will to liberate me, delivering me and my soul from the horror of desolation and ruin. Desolation and ruin is human corruption, human political and religious corruption. And from the power of those who are all heart and no thinking, all emotion, all faith, and no substance.
If you felt Black Lives Matter, the greatest message you could give them is this one.
Yes.
This is the message. You should adopt what we're doing and stop being so focused on all that other stuff. This is it. You cannot, like a conversation I've had with
Doctors,
you can only save the body. We're trying to give you life eternal. That's the...
Yes. Rather than being focused on the myth that that whites are mostly racist, because they're not, that whites are out targeting blacks, it's actually blacks that are targeting blacks. Rather than promoting the unified ethnicity, and rather than promoting a political cause, Black Lives Matter was founded by a communist. Rather than promoting those things, God's in it to liberate us from those things, delivering us from those things. And so rather than seeking to join them, rather than seeking to accept them, rather than seeking to agree with them, you ought to be seeking to distance yourself from that mindset. It's not your physical body that matters, it's your soul. And desolation and ruin, which is the consequence of many of these riotous, looting, arson-based protests, is the very thing God is trying to free us from rather than motivate us to.
Yes.
And the people that are doing this, you can see they're lashing out emotionally. They're chanting emotionally. They're koleb, all heart and no brain. That's the reason why two programs in a row we've taken the time to expose the fact that the movement's foundation, its basis, is so fundamentally flawed, it is actually promoting the antithesis of what's true. The King James, by the way, published this as, "Deliver my soul from the sword, my darling from the power of the dog."
I gotta look it up.
The New American Standard Bible said, "Deliver my soul from the sword, my only life from the power of the dog." They knew
that's exactly right.
Wow. Yeah, save me from the sword, my precious life from these dogs. You know, you've got to just take a moment, folks, and consider the etymology of the words. Consider what's being conveyed by these words. Now, how many times have you heard the religious say, "I have a good heart. God knows my heart. I have been a good person." It's
the Christian lament.
This person that wrote me, "I feel," was their, they couldn't come up with a logical motion system.
Yeah.
So
my emotion
said with I feel.
Mm-hmm.
God is saying that those who are all feeling, that's not so good.
Yeah.
So there is no dog here, and there is no sword here, because how can you deliver us a soul from the sword?
Okay.
It's Koreb. You know, Koreb is, and I think it's vocalized Koreb rather than Koreb. The former is a knife, a dagger, a sword, an axe, or a chisel. But since Yahweh's Passover ordeal, including whipping and the piercing torment of crucifixion, if the prophetic passage were changed to represent the plea to be spared from cutting implements, Yahweh's sacrifice would be disqualified as it would not fit the predictions. So why would a Christian Bible translated as deliver my soul from the sword, and A, souls are incorporeal, and therefore a sword is a meaningless effect on it. And when Yosha was not attacked with a sword. And where in the world do you get darling? the Romans were just not known to have a bevy of dogs yelping at the crucifixion victim. So I'm sorry, this is not the night of the werewolves. It just got to take a little time and think it through. Inspiration is there, insights are there, wisdom is there, understanding is there, if you seek it. You have chosen to liberate me and deliver my unique life from this loneliness, the fearsome and destructive beasts, mouths, and from the horns of the bull representing the flashing lights that has risen on high. You have answered me during my affliction.
Uh-huh.